The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Yarle çeni derneni pişürmüşsün mezyonet. Yarla, 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 yarla. Yarla, 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 yarla. Yarla, 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 yarla.
Hey everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Continuing Avant-Garde Month, we're going to be discussing 1968's Color of Pomegranates, directed by Sergei Parajanov. But before we do that, let's do this. Does anyone have any heralds and denouncements? Patrick?
Yes, I would like to denounce a film that I had previously put on my best of list, but I rewatched and it was terrible. It was also recently denounced by Basil, and that is Frank Darabont's The Mist.
A double denouncement.
Yeah, I have basically just decided that Frank Darabont is terrible as a filmmaker and creator of television at this point. So I must have really liked that movie when I saw it in 2008, but it doesn't hold up well, and Stephen King is kind of an awful author also, because he apparently
an author
because he apparently hates people. Just all of them, all people, he hates them.
Haven't we discussed that movie on this podcast already?
Basil denounced it.
Eventually it, yeah. Everyone will watch it and denounce it at some point.
I just had to rewatch it because it was on my best of list, and I was like, oh boy, I probably don't like that movie, and it's probably going to get kicked off the list. And boy, howdy, did it. Did it ever.
It's a bad one.
Got kicked from 5 stars down to 1 star. It is still kind of satisfying to watch Toby Jones shoot Marcia Gay Harden, though. Even though
spoilers,
that in and of itself is also massively problematic. That whole through line in the movie.
Yeah.
I'm looking at his movies, and the only one that I kind of want to see is one that he wrote, not directed, which is Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dream Warriors.
Basil?
Maybe I'll just denounce the month of October. As far as movie watching goes.
Why the month of October?
I mean, not October, March. The month of March. But the month of October, too. It's going to be a bad one, you guys.
It's still 7 months
away, but it's going to be no good. Sorry, everybody. I think because of the horror movie, it got me confused chronologically. But maybe. Maybe this won't come out until October, and then it'll sound irrelevant.
Nope. It's coming out in April for sure.
That's true.
Unlike some of our podcasts.
But, yeah, Letterboxd every year does a 30 days, 30 countries thing where you watch a movie from a different country every day. And so far, I've watched a bunch of them. But I've only liked two, and of those two, I only barely liked them. So it's been a pretty rough month for. I think I've seen 15 at this point. So 2 out of 15 are 3-star movies.
Mm. Yep, and last year this was really good for you. So
yeah, I saw a bunch of like 4-star movies, including some of. And even higher, I think. And some of them are, like, you know, pretty new faves. But this year's been pretty dire.
Well, you could always come back to good old America. Watch more American movies. Make you feel...
And no more branching out for me.
Yeah, that's over. Well, I watched Goodfellas with Carla the other day, which I haven't watched in a long time, and it's a really unpleasant movie. but I feel like I... while I didn't love it as much as I did King of Comedy, I at least have a much higher opinion of Scorsese now. And it never seems to me like he is doing anything but... he isn't doing any romanticizing of you know, the people that he's depicting. Pretty much every single scene, which, like, to me where it becomes obvious is when he shows how people laugh. It always looks so disgusting and so unfunny, so that you kind of question yourself for even thinking what happens in this movie is funny in the first place. And it is a really funny movie, and Scorsese, as usual, is actually really good with the comedic timing. But yeah, I mean, it's a very unpleasant movie to watch, so it's hard to recommend. But yeah, I feel like there's a lot less sentimental bullshit attached to it than, let's say, The Godfather or something.
So wait, was that a Herald or announcement?
Right, yeah. That's just a movie that I watched now.
Because I watched one movie, but I can't Herald or denounce it. So.
Well, that didn't stop me from talking, apparently. Yeah, that's... So now I have to say something, so I guess I'll Herald it.
Okay.
Goodfellas. As great as everyone says.
The best.
One of the best movies of the 90s, says Ilya.
Yep.
Of Loose Cannons.
I will say that something that film does that I find is unusual in other gangster movies is that it actually tells things from the point of view of his wife. So it actually, like, gives one of the female characters agency a little bit in that story, so that is something unique.
But just for
that.
A little while, it's not.
Yeah, yeah, it's not the whole. It's not a long time, but it does actually, like, give her side of the story a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Also,
so it's got that going for it.
Yeah, I guess I could herald that another podcast. Speaking of Goodfellas, called "I Was There Too" by Matt Gourley, that talked about Goodfellas and had that actor who plays Johnny whatever, Johnny Provolone or something like that, talk about his role in it. And it's a really great podcast because he just, like, picks supporting actors or whatever, or bit role players, and lets them talk about their role in huge movies, and it's a lot of fun. You guys should check it out.
That sounds awesome. I heard about that and then I kept forgetting that it existed until got that up again, but this time I'll try not to forget.
Matt Gourley seems like a really nice host.
Ilya, I think you'll find that his name is Johnny Asiago.
He was right about it being a cheese, though.
No, that's a joke. That's also a joke.
Oh, okay.
It's Johnny Mozzarella.
Yeah, like I said, I saw one movie and I neither went to Herald nor denounce it. So let's move on to Color of Pomegranates. This was Ilya's pick, so if you can say something about this movie, not necessarily the plot, but something.
Sure, yeah. Since this movie is very much a non-linear narrative.
It's pretty linear.
Well, let's say linear, but not. It's a pretty. Yeah. The narrative is kept to, like, poetic images rather than a story. Mm-hmm. And it's presented in a form of, like, these tableaus. And excerpts from the life of an Armenian bard called Sayat Nova, and basically tells his life story from his early childhood through his youth, and then his entering a monastery and death. And the movie, pretty much all the main roles are played by one actress, which is, I thought, was pretty interesting. And the movie is pretty special, I guess, in the sense that it was a movie made during the height of the Soviet Union, 1969, which is unabashedly about religion and a country's heritage and history, which completely disassociates itself from like the assimilation that was going on during the Soviet Union. And Parajanov got basically banned from making movies after putting this one out, so you know, it's pretty special.
He really believed in it.
He must have.
This is,
I guess I'm first, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's true.
I really like this movie. Even though I took a lot of notes, I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to say about it, because a lot of the notes are just like, you know, a description of an image I saw that I thought was cool. So this should be an interesting podcast. I mean, I guess all the avant-garde ones will be, but I feel like this one even more so than the others, having seen some of all of them. But yeah, I mean, I just thought that it was very rhythmic and melodic and had some really cool images and was shot really well, so I liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that I'm slightly on the side of liking it, although I did go on a bit of a roller coaster with this movie. I started off not enjoying how arch it was, and then I got into it a little bit and kind of enjoyed the imagery, and then I got kind of tired of the way that it shot everything and framed everything the same, and then I started getting into it again at the end, toward the dream sequence part where the wind is kind of blowing everything away. I thought that it really got kind of really imaginative and fun again at that point, and I also really enjoyed the ending. Typically, I want to talk about the ending first, but I'm slightly on the side of enjoying this film. So yeah.
Then I'll be slightly on the side of not enjoying it. If I actually had an almost opposite reaction in that, at the very beginning of the movie, I loved it and I was like, whoa, I'm really going to love this movie. And then basically as soon as he transitioned from being a kid into being an adult, the average like shot length went way, way up. And instead of showing me like a lot of really cool images pretty quickly, and I was like, hey, this is fun. It's like a little dance of like crazy stuff happening. There was just like a lot of long posed shots that I didn't enjoy, and it picked up a little bit later, but there's a whole middle section where I got real bored of watching it and was not interested, and it never fully recovered for me. I feel like if it was just a short movie of that time when he was a kid, I'd be like, fuck, I love this movie. But
I like this movie. There's some shots there's a shot in the beginning of it which is probably one of my favorite shots of all shots ever, which is when the kid is lying in the sea of books that are like flattering in the wind. I remember watching this movie first time when I was like trying to watch this movie the first time when I was 16 and not making it past the first like 5 or 10 minutes because I didn't know what the hell was going on or what to make of it. And but I remember that shot very vividly, and it was just as beautiful as I remembered. There's I think that I understand where Basil's coming from also, in that the movie does change, like the rhythm of it does also change with the different chapters, though I felt like that was probably intentional and also mirrored in a way the transitions that were going on. And whereas the beginning feels vibrant and new and exciting, also kind of mirroring this feeling of childhood and youth and love and discovery of all this stuff, the later chapters dealing with the poet's entry into the monastery and things like that and his like eventual facing death, they kind of also, you know, are not shown to be in an exciting fashion, which I felt like, you know, that was probably intentional. But, you know, you could argue that the movie doesn't also like becomes visually hard to process or hard to enjoy at that point. But I was, you know, it's already kind of struggling, really trying to understand exactly what it was going for, on like a concrete level, and just kind of guessing at what it might be going for. And at least that to me always stayed interesting, because most of the time I was just trying to figure out what was going on. So yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think the rhythm thing, I mean, you can obviously dislike it if you want, but it was definitely about like the aging process and the idea that like when you're like younger, the idea that, you know, you kind of see something and move on pretty quickly more often, and then as you get older and older, sort of your interests in your life, everything kind of goes slower and more, you know, elongated
as you think about it. That's the opposite of how I feel like it really is, though. When I was a kid, it felt like everything took forever, and now I feel like everything goes by way too fast.
Yeah. I'm starting to feel that now, too.
No, I don't. I guess that's not what I mean. I mean that you, I mean, I think things feel like they go by fast now because we are slower, is like what I mean. Like, we're not as fast as kids. And I think when you think about like your interests, like, you know, maybe when you were 13, you could be like, I like movies. But like now you would be like able to give a much more detailed definition of what it is that you like about movies and like how you like them. And that's like a longer idea, as opposed to like a kid is like, I like running, I like movies, I like my friends.
Sure.
And like the that's fair. Like, sort of like short staccato stuff.
Right.
Also, if you check yourself into a monastery, you'll probably also think that things move pretty slow now.
That's probably true. But
Sorry, what were you about to say?
I was curious because I don't know. Like, I like that sort of as an argument, but also at the same time, I'm like, but did this movie do that? Was it like lingering on an idea in the way that talking about a movie for a long time is possible when you're older? I don't know. I just couldn't draw. I guess for me, the movie never stopped being like a series of forms. And so I was like, I want to see more forms faster. Because I'm like, I got this shot. This is a cool shot. But let me get to the next one.
I mean, I think it forces you to reconcile with it in a way in which the earlier shots don't. Mm-hmm. Like, now you have to be more into the specificity of the shot if you're going to keep your own attention with it.
Yeah.
I will say the staginess of some of the shots really kind of brought me down. Specifically, the part where I don't remember exactly what it was called, but it was where he was sort of, I guess, going into the monastery, or when he was. It was where they were kind of out in a field, and there were a lot of horses around. For some reason, the shots in that segment did not work for me at all. The staginess of it kind of took away from, I think, the mystique that they were going for. And to that end, I also felt that the way that they used the jump cuts looked really cheap and took away also from the mystique, because I feel like if it had been shot really elegantly at that point, I would have enjoyed it more. But it's shot like in almost a student film kind of style, where they just like jump cut really fast, and like somebody's over here, and then they're over here, and then they're over here, and I was like, this looks really cheap and doesn't fit the style to me at all. I don't know if there was just too much of a disconnect at that point.
I don't know the exact parts you're talking about, but I'm not with you on that point.
I sort of am. I mean, I think I know the parts where he's talking about. It sort of seems like a character is disappearing and reappearing in different parts of the frame, but the camera shot's not stable. So sometimes, like when it cuts and the person is in a different shot, the framing is also slightly different. Like there's a part where there's a bunch of rugs and they're moving behind the rugs and then moving out from different rugs, but
yeah,
the shots aren't seamless because every time it cuts, the placement is slightly different too, where it's like
Sorry, I actually meant more the staginess, though. Which is something that I kind of liked. Yeah, I mean, I know the specific shot that you're talking about, and I think it would have been better if they had a tripod that they locked down and were able to get that right. But in general, I would say that the jump cuts in general, though, worked for me, and that I liked the staginess. I don't know. It's I guess it makes me think of some of the things that Ilya has said about, like, The Cool World and on other podcasts about the idea of, like, not... sometimes, like, not necessarily trying to create a reality and being, like, aware of the artifice. Not that anyone was going to take this as a...
as a historical as a document, yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know. I like... I mean, I like non-actors when they're all non-actors. I like the vibe that it gives off sometimes.
Yeah, plus, I mean, there's an interesting discussion to be had about this movie's version of, or interpretation of you know, reality in a way, because, I mean, this movie feels alien even now. Can you, like, imagine how it must have even felt like in 1969, especially to a country that pretty much this allowed any kind of sense of, you know, independence for, like, countries like Armenia, or, like, even a sense of its own history. And as far as that history had, you know, if it didn't have anything to do with Soviet history, it pretty much might as well not have existed, which was, like, that was, like, the party line at the time. So, like, basically making a movie all about this poet's life in the 18th century with, like, very obscure religious reference, like Armenian Orthodox Christian rituals and clothing and poems and things like that, and just, like, basically confronting people with the fact that, well, this is, like, our people's tradition, and this is our people's reality, and it seems completely bizarre to you now because it's also, like, in a formal way very challenging, but it's also, like, meant to be confrontative, like, be very radical in that way. And, you know, the staginess in a way is also, like, could be seen as, like, an attempt to comment on the fact of, you know, well, sure, it's stagey and weird, but not any more stagey or any more weird than, like, the history that we're being fed here every single time we watch a movie about, like, Soviet life or whatever. Like, how isn't that stagey? You know, so...
Or, like, the idea that we don't have a historical cultural document because it's been erased, so reminding you that we had to create a fake thing to stand in for it because our culture was taken away from us.
Yeah, even, like, exactly, even in the way of saying, like, we purposely created something fake just to have the illusion of something real
I did not have any of the context of, like, where the film was made or, like, what it was supposed to be portraying when I saw it, so I was simply coming at it from the standpoint of, like, okay, it's about somebody. I don't really know who. I couldn't really glean any information about who the person was exactly, other than like sort of their inner life from watching this film, because it's all very dreamlike. But I thought it, you know, if I guess if you come at it with that context, it does improve my experience with the film a little bit, because then I'm like, okay, I understand what all of this is moving towards, what it's pointing towards. I kind of understand, excuse me, the overall goal of the filmmaker in with that context attached to the film. As it stood, I was coming at it from basically kind of recognizing it as being, I guess, not necessarily the direct inspiration, but it certainly informed other stuff that I had seen. And maybe what was problematic was that the biggest thing that I saw that was informed by it was a Monty Python sketch called it was called Confuse-A-Cat Limited, and it staged things very much in the same way, where all the characters were facing the camera on one side, and then they would sort of like jump cut and move around the stage, and it was just the whole point was they were trying to confuse this cat because it had like depression or whatever, and so they were kind of like trying to shake it out of its state. But it looked very similar to that, and so there was a disconnect where I was like, this looks like a comedy sketch that I've seen before, and I'm not really connecting to like the, you know, the beautiful dreamlike qualities because I've already seen it mocked somehow. But I felt fair. That it informed that, and it also informed there was a part that I thought looked like that that Gautier video. I even wrote in my notes, I was like, you didn't have to cut me off, because that was what it reminded me of.
Oh, God. And,
I'm sorry.
And then it also reminded me a little bit of Susan Pitt's Jefferson Circus songs, with the people with the white face paint and all the stuff happening in the frame at once. So there were all these other things that I was seeing in it, and I was like kind of hearkening back. I was like, oh, yeah, it's informed all these other things. That was like spot the reference, basically, for me. I was like, all right, that looks like this thing. And so this movie must have been influential outside of the, you know, its country of origin. Certainly, it must have been like a.
It definitely is.
Yeah. I mean,
I feel like if for a while that was probably the only place you could see it. You could probably see it everywhere except for the USSR.
Yes, ironically, of course, the one country where it should have been, you know, where it was like intended to be seen.
Yeah, I was also curious. Does it ever state it outright what the religion specifically that they're talking about is? Because I assumed Christianity, because they talk about, you know, God with the capital G.
Sure, yeah.
In that way, but you never see like, I don't think you ever see any crosses or anything like that. There's no like specific.
You see, they have blood rituals, though.
Yeah, and you see like some what do you call it? You know, the engravings and things like that, where you see like.
I don't think blood rituals are associated with Islam, but I could be. Improved.
Like there's a lot of cross symbolism. Also, there's like while he's a kid, he gets a cross painted on his forehead.
With chicken blood.
Oh, did they? I didn't see him actually make the cross. I saw him just like put the blood on his head, and then the kid like.
I thought that was like a cross motion, but I might.
Oh, was that what he was doing? I thought he was wiping it off.
And I think the color of pomegranates is supposed to be Christ's blood.
Yeah,
but I'm not positive.
The
pomegranate juice that's like always being made. I think that was
right. But this is obviously a very different type of Christianity from the one we would be used to, because we're all about the Protestantism here in the United States, and this is more. I don't know. What would you say? It's like,
well, it's
Eastern Orthodoxy,
Orthodox,
maybe.
Orthodox. Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say like it seems more like Eastern Orthodox than. Than what we're used to. So it's a very different type of Christianity, and one that I'm not used to seeing in film. So that is interesting from that standpoint. It's something that you don't usually see portrayed.
Okay. Mm. I just have two quick things to say before we get... Well, one of them we're slightly far away from, and the other one we're already really far away from. But One, just a comment that I think it took me a long time actually to enjoy non-narrative avant-garde type stuff, because there's this old English sketch making fun of films like that. It's really funny, but it's also, it's done actually kind of well. And I think for a long time I thought, because it was a parody that was really funny, that anything that was like it was done badly. But it's actually, it's really close to actually being a good avant-garde film, with just enough done to make it a parody. And I think that made it hard for me to enjoy, because every time I would watch an avant-garde film, I would just think of the line from the video, which is like, "The river does not stop flowing." How much that made me laugh. But the other thing that I just wanted to quickly say about time and experiencing time, I don't want to get too deep into personal stuff, but the experience of time is actually pretty directly more related to happiness and fulfillment than it is related, like, directly to age. So if you guys are experiencing time faster now than you were as a kid, you're probably less happy than you were as a kid.
I almost guarantee it.
Whereas older adults who feel satisfied with their life feel like time is going pretty slowly.
Man. I didn't know how happy I was, apparently. It seemed like I was constantly frustrated that things weren't happening sooner.
Time is like... So the issue of time in the movie is a big deal. There's constant references and symbols and
clocks,
like both visually and orally. So you hear a lot of clocks, you hear a lot of ticking,
pouring sands of time.
Yes, there's a lot of that going on. That's one of the major themes of the movie, seems like. And there's, beyond that, like, there seems to be an emphasis on, like, going with the religious motif on the Trinity also, or like things appear in threes a lot, be it like people or animals or things like that. Those are
three,
like,
goat heads.
Yep, the three goat. Like, yeah, what. That was probably the scene that was the hardest to watch, probably, as for me at least. That was the goat disemboweling scene.
I mean, intentionally so, I feel like.
Yes, really, absolutely.
I don't think I've mentioned this on podcast. I think I've mentioned this off podcast, but that I'm actually pro killing animals on film, because it forces people to deal with the feelings that killing an animal creates, as opposed to, say, eating a burger, which is completely separate from the experience.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And it's kind of like you get to kill one animal, and then, you know, however many people watch it experience the feeling, whereas, like, if they were hunting or whatever, only one person experiences the feeling per one animal.
Mm-hmm. I also feel like in this movie you saw, like, it was directly connected to food. Like, the slaughter was then followed by a shot of the meat appearing in this bowl. So basically they showed it to be, like, directly linked to it. So I also felt like this was not just for, like, this was intended to, like, make you question certain presumptions that you may have had or not had about, you know, what happens to those animals and how your food gets where it is, and how that has also to do with the religious ceremonies and whatever that goes on. I definitely didn't feel like they were just slaughtered for the heck of it. It seemed to have, like, meaning attached to it, and whatever uncomfortable feeling I had, which, you know, I had while watching it, would definitely seem like it was intended.
Mm-hmm. I I did like the way that they put the animals in some of the frames. I know there was one where I think it was a goat that was just eating one of the pieces of fruit that they had laying on the ground. Like, I don't know if that was supposed to happen, but they had, like, everybody else was kind of stage standing still, and the goat was just like eating a piece of fruit. He was just like, oh boy, fruit. Like, he was just
there was
sort
of
ignoring what was
going
on with
the humans. Sheep acting in this movie, too.
Yeah, or it might have been a sheep. Yeah, it was probably a sheep.
They were standing on these stairs. There were, like, these sheep.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But,
just standing on the stairs and being completely still, which I felt like that must have taken a long time to get them to stand perfectly still for as long as they did.
Yeah. I also thought the llama did a good job. There was a funny part, though, where the people were kind of like dancing around the llama, and the llama was just like looking back and forth. He was like, what are you guys doing? What's going on here? The llama was like totally confused by what was happening. But I thought the animal acting in general was pretty good in this movie.
Yeah, it was in, with that the slaughter part, there was a moment that I've written down where like the blood becomes juice, becomes water. Getting back to like Christian like blood rituals and like disconnect from like the original thing, and also the idea of like cleansing and stuff like that. I thought that was pretty cool.
And again, just the presence of the religious symbolism as much as it is here is already like a very radical notion in the completely atheist, non-religious Soviet Union, where no religious elements ever made a way into a movie unless they were made fun of or, you know, like depicted as ridiculous or obscene.
Was this movie not making fun of it? I couldn't tell. There were some scenes where it seemed like the rituals were super ridiculous and like it might be making fun of it, but then others not. So I was like, what is this movie's stance? I can't tell you. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
like that one part with the Lazarus or whatever it was, and then he was dead, and when they show his tomb, it's just in the monastery, but then surrounded by sheep, like just this giant pile of sheep just like hanging out, and you have to wade through them to get to him. And I was like, is this supposed to be funny? Because it seems like it is a little bit, but I can't tell.
I didn't find any of it funny, but it could just be me. I guess talking about like image connections or whatever, a similar scene is in O Hazard Balthazar, which I can't remember if it came up before this or not, but where something lays down to die and is in a field of sheep, and it's an obvious Christ metaphor, like, you know, being like a shepherd of men and stuff like that, and the idea that they've all come to like mourn. So that's all I thought of when I saw that moment.
Yeah. I guess my contemporary context is that whenever men are equated as sheep, it's not in a positive way.
That's true.
Yeah, I could go the other side where Angel's trying to stop that demon sacrifice, and he keeps running into all the goats, and he's walking through so many goats in the space, and he's like, couldn't help but notice all the goats. You got goats? Many?
Yeah. Plus, you could see, like, the animal symbolism, or, like, the presence of animals also, like, as a counter idea to, like, the presence of industry. Again, like the more like rural ideal or like rural reality that is also like something that would be antithetical to the idea of Soviet industry, you know, which was basically where they, during Stalin, they basically industrialized the country within, 10, 15 years and completely destroyed every bit of like the former agricultural society, and with that the identity of most people and whole countries at times. So like reconnecting with that is also like kind of subverting the idea of what, you know, the ideal of society should look like. And, you know, in Parajanov's world or whatever, you know, whatever he's depicting, it seems like humans and animals are just always part of the same space.
Did anyone do any research? Because saying all that makes me wonder, like, how did this movie get made? Like,
research.
How does he get the... I don't know. I feel like because I know the 60s were a little less strictly controlled than the 50s after Stalin died and whatnot, but it's still like, you know, I don't know.
Well, this movie never came out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was, I think what I, like, it was cut in a way that Parajanov hated, and he constantly had budget problems. They didn't let him use the film stock he wanted to use, and like just basic things that he didn't have for this movie. And then they also forbid it from ever being screened. And like, I think it was screened for the first time, even not even in the Soviet Union, but somewhere in the West. And you know, that's why also Parajanov became like a big hero to a lot of French New Wave people. And you know, I think Antonioni was a huge fan of his, and like some other people.
Sure,
I can see that.
But yeah, I think you make a good point. Like, none of this sounds like, you know, it could ever even be, even get made. And I think, like, it looks, you know, like, it looks beautiful, but it also looks like they didn't have a lot of money to make it, you know? Like, it looks like they definitely improvised a lot of it and did, like, made do with whatever they could. So.
Sure.
They had enough money to afford a couple men standing in holes. Which made me super uncomfortable for some reason when it was like just like their heads like popping out of the hole or whatever.
Oh, at the monastery, like,
And I was like, I could never put my head through a sized hole.
Those manholes were crazy narrow. That's true.
Well, I got a couple of things, and maybe if, like, I could say them and people could respond to them if they want.
Sounds good.
So there's a part towards the beginning where they're, like, draining books of water or, like, wetness or something, where they're just, like, leaving them out to dry or, like, squeezing liquid out of them. Does anyone have anything that they thought about that?
No, other than that was the shot that convinced me I was going to love this movie. I was like, that's the coolest shot I've ever seen in a movie. And they, like, set the big press on these, like, soaking wet books, and the soapy water just goes, like, out of it.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing.
I thought that there was something going on with the shot. It's a close-up of the man, like, pressing the books onto the boy's hand. And I didn't know exactly what that was supposed to be saying, but I know it was significant because they showed it in close up, so I was like, huh, what's he saying there?
Yeah. I mean, they're getting something out of the books. I just don't know whether or not they're getting something that there is good that they're keeping, or something that, you know, was tainting the books. I don't know.
Well, I think if you take it at face value, the poet says something about how books are super necessary and we need them, and I guess it makes sense if within the Stalinist regime he's trying to suppress all this these separate cultures and suggest that there was just this one USSR narrative or whatever, that holding on to these Armenian books are like the way to prove that your history actually happened.
Yeah, and also in a weird way it's like squeezing the juice from the fruit and squeezing whatever juice they got out of the books is also some kind of, it's probably also connected in some way.
Yeah, there's also a lot of like water running down walls in this too.
Yeah, I mean, liquid was important, blood, juice, and water.
Yeah.
I was thinking very specifically consistent. Of the scene where the boy kind of like sees the woman's naked body, or like mostly naked body. And he's like looking down, and you see like the water running down the wall behind him, like just beginning, and then the water is like running on her body as well. And I was like, there's a lot of different things that could symbolize in that context, and I kind of get all of them. So I understood what was going on at that point, but then I guess the next part was what kind of confounded me. It was just like people sitting around with candles and putting like small slivers of lace over their eyes, and I was like, wait a minute. These people didn't have any clothes on a minute ago. What's going on now?
I wonder if this movie also was an inspiration for Kenneth Anger.
Yes.
Yeah.
Probably was.
I mean, for sure. Post-1968 Kenneth Anger, for sure.
Yeah.
I see, like, Scorpio Rising. Or not Scorpio Rising. Lucifer Rising.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All over the place here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, another note I have is searching for ourselves in each other, or like in other people. I can't tell you exactly what inspired that, but something about, I don't know.
The poet says that at a certain point. And yeah, I think it's...
Hi, monkey.
Yeah. I just love seeing monkey grooming cat. Herself behind you. She's just like...
She's really going to town. Yeah, I mean, that part struck me as a little sexist because, that's when it first shows the woman who's like his lover or whatever, the whole movie. But, I don't know. I feel like at that point it becomes kind of a romantic thing in a way that I think is kind of bleh. But, like, if it just shown a different person, then I'd be like, oh, that's kind of cool. But this fact that it equates it with this kind of, I don't know, sexuality. And the very last thing that he says in the movie is something like, a poet may die, but not his muse. And then it shows the woman again. And I was like, that's gross.
Yeah, I mean, the movie is very male-centric in a way. That's for sure. And like, and I don't think particularly self-critical of its male-centricness.
Yeah,
probably not. Even though, like I said, like it's weirdly undercut by having all the male roles in the beginning have played by an actress, which kind of like that's definitely not the kind of thing that was also normal in Soviet movies, that you would have any kind of gender discrepancy going on when you're looking at someone. But like, when I was watching the movie, I remember like thinking like, oh my god, this actor is so beautiful, like this is like a really, it made me even uncomfortable because I was like, this child is also really, really good looking. I don't know how does this make me feel. Really,
I did think that kid had some wicked eyebrows, like his eyebrows were incredible. His
eyes were huge. And then like but then Syednova is falling in love with this woman, right? And they're both played by the same actress again, which I felt kind of neatly maybe also says something about the way that, yeah, sure, a poet can fall in love as long as it's with someone that looks exactly like himself.
A little narcissism there.
But yeah,
I don't know. Searching for ourselves and each other.
True.
I thought my favorite part of the movie was.
I feel super dumb that I didn't even notice that was her.
I didn't notice at all at first either. I actually cheated a little bit because there was something going on with it, and I looked it up, and then I realized, oh yeah, there is something weird going on. It's all this played by the same.
It's the same person. That explains why there was no credit for it. I was like, there's the young boy, there's the old man, but who played him when he was a young man?
Yeah, so Sophie Cucciarelli plays poet as a youth, poet's love, poet's muse, mime, and angel of resurrection. She plays all these six roles. So I think that's definitely a pretty interesting
way. That's pretty interesting, for sure. Yeah.
And Parajanov got accused of, amongst other things, he was sent to prison for homosexuality, which was a pretty, first of all, in the Soviet Union, homosexuality was obviously something completely awful and so on, but sending someone to prison for homosexuality was a pretty common thing to do with with artists and basically non-conformist thinkers. And so I don't know if, you know, like, there's like the comment of phallocentrism kind of applies here in that sense, because like it's kind of makes it out to be like, well, you know, he's like obsessed with, you know, I mean, Parjanov, I'm not even sure whether or not he even, you know, like, he was sent to prison for homosexuality. Whether or not he was actually gay, that's a completely different question. Maybe he even was, but that's definitely not, had nothing to do with, you know, how, you know, what made him dangerous for that, for the society.
Sure.
Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah, sure.
Do it.
Which of these two fires can I endure? Is that another quote from him, or is that an image? It's been the longest since I saw it of everybody.
Yeah, I think it's a quote, but I couldn't tell you what it was. I like the part with the, this is totally off topic, but I like the part with the men all in robes eating the pomegranates, because it's really gross, because if you've ever eaten pomegranate, you're not supposed to just like bite into it. You're supposed to like open it up and then get the fruit out, because the like the outer part's really hard and bitter and disgusting.
So, and it's like filled with seeds, and the seeds are sometimes hard to eat as well.
So that part was pretty amazing. I was super down for that shot.
I think my favorite part was when there was like a person in front of, like, it could have been a coffin, or it could have just been like a raised platform, and they were like sort of standing behind it, and then like it started cutting to like another person who was standing in like a similar place, and then there was like dirt or something like blowing from behind them, like all over the screen, and it was like cutting back and forth between the people and like dirt and no dirt. I thought that part was really cool. I do agree with Basil that I have a note here that I felt like the end seemed imagistically less original than some of the stuff at the beginning, and that there was a part where there was like really hard drumming that just didn't totally fit in with everything else, that sort of threw me off for a minute.
Oh yeah, this is unrelated, but I think it's a funny story, sort of. It's related to the music, not to the drumming, but the bagpipe part. I actually watched this at the theater that I work at, and sometimes during the week, the theater is also a classroom, and there's two different like little auditoriums. And it occurred to me halfway through the movie that I hope, because it's finals week, that there wasn't a final going on in the other classroom, because they're not soundproof, and if I had to like take a test and I could just hear through the wall this really loud, obnoxious like bagpipe music, it would be driving me crazy while trying to study or like concentrate. So I felt a little bad, but nobody came in to complain, so I think it was fine.
Yeah, what did you guys think about the music in general?
I liked a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean, my only negative note is that drums part that I thought just didn't really fit.
Yeah.
And I like the way that it uses, I don't know, like, diegetic sound, but then looped it to make it kind of musical. Like the part when they're chipping, like they're chipping away at the monastery, like trying to make these engravings on the wall. And then the chipping sound just keeps going for the next couple of shots and like the rest of the scene. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, the composer is a pretty great film composer and just musician in general, Tigran Mansourian, who I think he was born in Lebanon originally, but he was like Armenian, or later became Armenian citizen, and he did a lot of, like, there's a lot of these albums that he produced and made in the 70s of like also very like Armenian folk and classical music, like combining those two things, and you know, was it fit pretty well with the theme of like recapturing this like pretty much non-existent history, you know, that's been written out, and trying to recapture, you know, it through music also. And I also felt like there wasn't really a clear score here, like as much as there were like a lot of different musical elements kind of going on every now and again. Like there wasn't like one theme that kept being played throughout.
Mm-hmm. A lot of motifs.
Mm-hmm. Lots of them.
There's a Hanson symbol, and I doubt you guys will have the answer to it, but I wrote it down, and, you know, meaning question mark, and it's like all of your fingers extended except for the ring.
Yes.
That we see a couple of times, and I didn't know if that had any. Was the thumb down or was the thumb up?
I think
I can't remember. There's the part where
I think it was like this,
the thumb statue of the hand down. Is like on his face for a long time.
We're doing a lot of hand symbols for the audience right now.
But I described it.
Yes, you did. For
fingers,
sure.
Fingers up except for ring finger. Ring finger down.
Yeah.
So imagine
if they've seen
mind,
the movie,
listener.
They know what we're talking about.
All right, listeners, put your hand in front of your face. Now, put your ring finger down. You got it. I guess no one happens to have any Armenian cultural experience or something and knows what that means.
No. Apparently it's called a shocker.
No, that is not the reference.
Is this did you find that on urbandictionary.com?
I found it on wikipedia.org.
No, that's a gross dude bro expression.
It is. I like how that's the first thing that comes up for that.
Doesn't
though.
Even make any sense, really, in reality. Yeah. Unless, like, your pinky is extremely long and bendable.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Anyway.
I just figured out what that phrase means based on context clues from this conversation.
Perfect.
Learning.
So I had a little bit of problems in, like, I guess the middle, late middle, but then at the end I started to really like it again. I liked the presentation of Angel of Death. I wrote that he could be in The Music Man, and death is a form of celebration, and the idea that the movie sort of ends with him, like, opening up to, like, accepting death. I don't know, I thought that was cool.
Yes, I enjoyed the ending, as I was saying earlier, as I was going to try and start it on. The part where the guy says, he just keeps telling him to sing as he's dying or whatever. I thought that was really a fun expression of death as opposed to like a really arch, you know, the usual expression, which is like death is the end or something. It's the, you know, the finality of it or whatever. It's that part is kind of celebratory and revelatory. And it was a nice change of pace. It wasn't what I was expecting from this movie, because a lot of this movie seems kind of arch in its expression of different, you know, emotions, but that part was kind of a left turn, so I enjoyed that about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, he tells him to sing a bunch of times and then he tells him to die.
That's how I want to die.
For sure. I was going to make a joke about Baroque when people keep saying arch, that one could even say it was Baroque, but it's a dumb joke since it is Baroque on purpose.
Yeah, I don't even get the joke. Unless
I
you
think
mean that Baroque sounds like broke and it was a completely made film.
Yeah, no. I think that people use like arch and stilted, and then they often use Baroque as a synonym for that because the style is very also like that. So, but that this is obviously intentionally Baroque because it's referencing like 18th century paintings and stuff. Mm. I don't know.
I love
with the
arch
flat tableaus.
Stuff.
What?
I love arch stuff.
Yeah.
When I use arch, I'm almost always using it positively.
Like Archer? It's the best show on TV.
No. That show's not arch. No, like the shot in Angel when Wesley stumbles on the girl that he likes kissing somebody else, and you get to see them kissing, and it's like his reflection in the plate, like being like brokenhearted, so you can see all of their reactions on one screen. And I was like, this is very arch, but I love it.
Some nice tableau.
I also feel like in general, like I guess with like movies from like Russia or the Soviet Union, you're used to a kind of like a different kind of mood, I guess, in a way where it's way more like, I don't know, like brooding or something like that. Like it's just like with Tarkovsky, this is very obvious, but like also with some other directors, like even now, like Sokurov or something like that, you're used to like some kind of like very like where thought, like you can feel the thoughts that went into it or whatever. Whereas with this movie,
they're methodical and overt.
Yeah, it seems like even though this movie, like Patrick said, like yeah, it is arch and it is staged, it's also like it's like very, you know, it's very colorful. It's like at times quite playful with what is going on. There's a lot of like it hasn't been like there's no complete thought with which it arrives, you know. It kind of hints at things, you know, and is way more you know, way more suited for being interpreted and interpreted freely. And I feel like that sort of, you know, that makes kind of Parajanov stick out a little bit as an author of the time, because as much as like Tarkovsky seems to like idolize him and constantly refer to him as one of his favorite directors, he's pretty much the opposite in a lot of his ways. And only in moments, like certain moments in Ivan's childhood or whatever, where I feel like, oh yeah, that's something that like I could feel like where he like seems inspired by Parajanov or something like that, you know. Otherwise, Parajanov seems to be a pretty special dude with his...
Have you seen Shadows of Forgotten Ancestors?
I have, but also a long, long time ago. I would like to rewatch that again. Because that...
Yeah, I haven't seen it. We were going to watch it in my film history class this year, but then something else replaced it, and I was really sad about that because I was excited to see it. But
I mean, I heard that Sayadnova is by far like his least like, you know, accessible movie. Otherwise, he may like pretty, you know, maybe not straightforward, but like way less... just purely symbolically driven movies, you know. I think Shadows of Forgotten Ancestors has like a story, an obvious story, and like characters and things like that, you know.
Yeah, I feel like he would have been banned a lot faster if he started with this movie or something like it.
Good
he had
point.
To build up the cachet in order to get banned by going against the grain.
Well, does anyone else have anything they would like to say about this movie?
Nope.
I'm gonna interpret that deafening silence.
I feel like
continued the podcast for a long time.
Yes, I feel like I talked a lot already. So
that's okay. We liked it the best, so that's somewhat to be expected.
It's true.
And I don't think
I don't want to poop on your parade. I don't want to be a parade pooper.
Yeah. It sounds like both Patrick and Basil were pretty in the middle. Mm-hmm. Like, Patrick liked it, but was pretty close to feeling ambivalent
liked
towards it.
It. Liked it with reservations.
With caveats.
And Basil disliked it, but was pretty close to liking it.
Yeah.
So. I wonder if I would have liked the... Because actually, the youth scene was kind of what lost me, and I wonder if I would have liked it more if I had realized at the time that it was the same actor, because... That one was the part where I was sort of what Ruben was hinting at before, that it seemed almost like a parody of avant-garde, where it's a lot of people just making a weird pose and then holding it for a long time, and then cutting to another person doing another pose and then holding it for a long time.
Yeah. This movie was very, like, 2D.
Mm-hmm.
There's not... Not a lot of...
A lot of voguing going
on. Do you
want
to compare it to a side-scrolling video game again?
Like all my favorite movies, compare it to a jump-and-run side-scroll.
I should do that sometime. I'd be like, hey, you like Mega Man, right? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, you should watch Colorful Pomegranates.
Check this out.
It is also extremely two-dimensional.
Also do that for anyone who likes the David Fincher Madonna video for Vogue.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, you like that, huh? Check this out.
You like staginess and people posing?
I should just find any reason to voice Color of Pomegranates on people.
Yeah.
Oh, coming of age stories? You like coming of age stories? I got the coming of age story for you.
You like books? And animals?
Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, and write a nice review. If you aren't enjoying our podcast, what is wrong with you?
Please let us know.
Yeah, maybe you
exactly
should go to
what
some
is wrong
therapy
with you.
And figure out those things that are keeping you from enjoying something that is so clearly good. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
All right.
Thank you.